IOU that braved IEDs in Kandahar. A promise was made to America's veterans. DAV fights to keep that promise so all veterans and their families get the benefits and support they earned. For help, visit DAV.org.
Live from Midtown Tucson, this is Power Talk 1210 Studios presenting Solomon on Blast
with Doug Martin and Pastor Fred.
Then wisdom appeared and she told me not to partake of that bread. Ports made in the house of the path that leads down to the dead. She said, come with me. Hold fast to my ways. Keep to me. Run like the hills. Let me show. All for you to know. I will raise your head and bring freedom to your soul.
Welcome, everybody, to Solomon on Blast. I hope you guys are having a great weekend, enjoying things out there. Today's November 14th, 2015, which just happens to be the 100th anniversary of the death of one of the most famous Americans in the 20th century, and even to some extent in the 19th century. He was born sometime around 1856, died, like I say, November 14th, 1915. Lived only about 58 years, which is not that old, but what he accomplished in that time that he did live goes far beyond what most people can achieve in multiple lifetimes. He was an educator, a writer, and a public speaker. His fame began in 1895 until his death in 1915, and during that time, he became one of the most well-known persons in the country and around the world. His devotion to the principle of self-government and his emphasis on character building permeated his philosophy of life. He helped found a university in 1881 that's still considered one of the tops in the country. In 1906, then Harvard President Charles Eliot, speaking at the university's 25th anniversary, stated that by 1905, that university produced more self-made millionaires than Harvard, Yale, and Princeton combined. He himself traveled extensively throughout the United States and Europe, raising money for the university back in a time when travel anywhere was far more difficult than it is today. He met, dined with, and was visited by Presidents McKinley, Teddy Roosevelt, and William Howard Taft, giving you some idea just how famous he was. He didn't have an easy life, though. He lived through the Civil War as a boy. He had to pay for his own education as a young man, and that included having to walk 200 miles to get to that school so he could get an education. In his adult life, he was widowed twice. His third wife helped raise his three children that were from his first two marriages. He clearly understood adversity, but he didn't allow it to control them. In one of the books, he wrote, "It makes a great deal of difference in the life of a race, as it does in the life of an individual, whether the world expects much of the or little of that individual. I suppose that every boy and every girl born in poverty have felt at some time in their lives that the weight of the world against them, what the people in the communities did not expect them to do, it was hard for them to convince themselves that they could do. After I got so that I could read a little, I used to take a great deal of satisfaction in the lives of men who had risen by their own efforts from poverty to success. It's a great thing for a boy to be able to read books of that kind. It not only inspires him with the desire to do something and make something of his life, but it teaches him that success depends upon his ability to do something useful, to perform some kind of service that the world wants. But probably most important, he was a Christian with the wisdom of Solomon. It's clear in his writings that he considered the Bible the most important book anyone could read. In one of his speeches, he stated, "The men doing the vital things of life are those who read the Bible and are Christians and not ashamed to let the world know it." He said, "To live the real religious life is in some measure to share the character of God, to be at one with God. Our real religious striving then should be to become one with God, sharing with him in our poor human way his qualities and attributes. To do this, we must get the inner life, the heart right, and we shall then become stronger where we've been weak, wise where we have been foolish. We must learn to incorporate God's laws into our thoughts and words and acts. Frequent reference is made to the Bible, to the freedom that comes in the Bible, to the freedom that comes from being a Christian. A man is free just in proportion as he learns to live within God's law. As we learn God's law and grow into his likeness, we shall find our reward in this world in a life of usefulness and honor. He went on to say, to do this is to have found the kingdom of God, which is the kingdom of character and righteousness and peace. At his death in 1915, Andrew Carnegie stated, I mourn with you today as one who shares your sorrow. America has lost one of her best and greatest citizens. My question is, any idea who I'm talking about? And if you don't know, well, we can wait till after the break. I'll go ahead and finish it now. I won't make you wait until after the commercial break. Maybe this will help you. This is a statement that he made with regards to the circumstances he grew up in. He said, it's not now long ago that I resolved that I would permit no man, no matter what his color might be, to narrow and degrade my soul by making me hate him. With God's help, I believe that I have completely rid myself of any ill feeling toward the southern white man for any wrong that he may have inflicted upon my race. I pity from the bottom of my heart any individual who is so unfortunate as to get into the habit of holding race prejudice. He grew up from slavery during the Civil War. He founded Tuskegee University in Alabama. If you still don't know, that's Booker T. Washington. So today is the 100th anniversary of his death, and I bring him up because his life is what we should be, is what should be being used as a model for achieving success today for minorities or any ethnicity instead of the foolishness and in some cases the wickedness of the approaches being used today. So, in honor of Booker T. Washington, we'll be right back with more of Solomon on Blast. But when the Lord, here it is, you gotta move. You may be high, you may be low, you may be rich, child, you may be poor. But when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move.
Want to keep tabs on your favorite Power Talk hosts and Fox Sports Radio? Start at the website, powertalk1210.com. There you can stream the shows, listen to past interviews on SoundCloud, see our latest tweets, and generally get sick and tired of us all. It's the perfect way to stay close with your Power Talk family. Power Talk 1210. Check it out.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
Do you struggle to take control of your cholesterol levels? If so, you have a higher cardiovascular risk of heart attack or stroke. Take control of your risk with the help of Tucson's trusted certified lipid specialist, Nicole Safone, and her team at Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology. Through a basic heart-healthy lifestyle and advanced therapies, you can start taking back control of your cardiovascular risk of heart attack or stroke. To schedule your advanced cholesterol screening and personal cardiovascular risk reduction plan, call Tucson's trusted certified lipid specialist, Nicole Safone, at Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology at 520-323-7277. Or ask your doctor for a referral to Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology, 520-323-7277. To learn more about cardiovascular risk reduction, be sure and visit us online at azlipidcenter.com. Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology, serving Tucson, Nogales, and Yuma. Call us today at 520-323-7277.
Why not give us a call now and join in the discussion? 750-7456. We want to hear what you have to say.
Hello?
Power Talk 1210.
We're back with more of Solomon Blast here on Power Talk 1210. If you want to join us in the conversation, 750-7456. Proverbs, Solomon says, when calamity comes, the wicked are brought down, but even in death, the righteous seek refuge in God. And with what happened in France yesterday, like that song says, you got to move, you got to do something when God moves. And it really brings to the forefront the question of what do you do when things like this happen? Do you seek refuge in God, or do you seek refuge in the government being able to control this kind of thing? There's been a lot going on over there in the EU, especially with regards to the immigration from Syria, and now France has shut down its borders, and it brings to light that the EU as a whole can't really control the individual countries, and that eventually each one of them are going to have to look at their own country's safety and deal with this kind of thing. But there's a lot going on over there, and the tragedy is just beyond belief. You get angry in terms of what you see when you see this kind of thing, because really it's hard to predict it. It's hard to really understand how you can resolve the problem when it's this kind of thing where it's individuals. You're not dealing with an army that's invading and can then build up an army against it. You're dealing with individuals that have a whole different mindset than what most people have. So how do you deal with something like this?
Well, you know, the United States used to have working in its favor, and I know a lot of people challenge this, but for loss of a better way to describe it, is a melting pot concept. That when you came into the United States, we've had this conversation, but we need to keep having it. You assimilated. It didn't mean that you left every part of your ethnic, you know, distinctives out of your life. It just meant that you understood, as an American, you found a common ground, and those common values created a platform for understanding and harmony. And so, second and third generation ethnic people became part of America, the whole entire fabric. And basically, you know, if it wasn't, we were talking about this last week, if it wasn't there before, a couple generations in, there's just a whole new aspect of American culture represented by certain ethnic groups. I mean, that is America. And you don't lose your entire ethnic identity by becoming, assimilating into your American, you know, side, the American side of your personality. So, you know, lots of us have dealt with this for years. I mean, especially if you have a long-term, long-standing, you know, generations in America. But here's the thing, Doug. What people just don't want to deal with here is the reality that you're bringing in people that don't have any intention of assimilating. It's like zero. And they capture some pop culture elements, perhaps, but beyond that, then they end up rejecting that as if that was their big problem, and you know, becoming even twice the radical.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of debate this past summer in Europe amongst all of the countries, the politicians over there, that how do they really deal with the people coming into these countries? And the problem isn't getting any easier. There was an article that I found. They had a chart on migrant arrivals in via the Mediterranean into Europe from 2014, June, July, August time frame, September. It had pretty much peaked, and then it fell off because of the colder months in October and November. People aren't willing to risk the colder ocean, the more turbulent oceans, in order to try and get across into Europe. But the peak was only around 40 some thousand people last year over the entire year. In 2015, that was exceeded in June alone. And June, July, August, September, October, it's been increasing exponentially. October's numbers are around 225,000 alone. So the problem really isn't going away in terms of these immigrants that are coming into Europe. And it's not even declining this year, according to the numbers that they have, as the weather becomes worse and worse. And so now, here's France shutting down its entire country. What are the other countries going to do, and how are they going to deal with this immigration problem now that this kind of thing is happening?
Yeah, the fallout from this is so far-reaching, because it's going to ripple all the way to the shores of the United States, where they're considering, right now we are considering, taking in tens of thousands of Syrian refugees. And you have to consider the implications of people wanting to come here with no intention of really becoming part of the fabric of your country. And that's where immigration becomes a real question. Not so much who, and I know it's a hot topic issue. In fact, this makes the Hispanic, you know, Latin American side look a lot safer, in fact, you know, when it comes to who you want to invite into your country. But, you know, here's the thing. Here's the white elephant. And somebody in the Israeli cabinet, I couldn't find it, a couple of years back, maybe five or whatever, suggested that maybe the nation of Israel change its policy toward Christian evangelists, which they are very careful not to let in, by the way, because they don't want to lose their Jewish identity in Israel, which, you know, I kind of understand that. I get that position. However, one of the officials there said, perhaps we should start allowing Christian missionaries into Israel and for the express purpose of converting Palestinians, which would make them a lot, you know, it would make them, I guess, at least in theory, a lot nicer to Jewish people. So I think this is what this person put their hand on is really the third rail all over the world. And that is, right now there is a moratorium in politically correct environments, international politics, against all missionary work toward Muslims. Why? You would think that France and nations that are dealing with would almost not only protect it, but almost invite it.
Embrace it.
Like, this becomes a very important part of assimilation, because outside of that, what you have is a mindset that not only is it hard to change, but they're actually taught very carefully that, you know, you're the worst of the worst if you don't embrace, you know, the big vision.
Right. So the question is, how do people really address this in their mind without having that refuge of God? I mean, these immigrants are coming looking for refuge, but if they don't have that refuge that we as Christians have, that we have hope in somebody, how do you deal with this kind of thing?
Yeah, how do you deal with somebody when he's that in his mind is able to compartmentalize where he can pray to Allah in the same moment that he's gunning down innocent victims, mm-hmm. when they say, you know,
yeah, they said in these attacks,
Allahu Akbar, whatever, yeah,
they were all yelling that as they did.
I mean,
this thing.
How do you deal with that? You know, I think one of the great challenges of our day really is to not allow the term Mediterranean and Muslim to mean the same thing. You know, there's some great cultures in the Middle East that predate Islam. Right. I mean, incredibly accomplished cultures. And not everybody who is Middle Eastern is also ethnically Arab. That's another thing that we just kind of brush past that, and we just assume it's all the same thing, which if you talk to them, they find that deeply offensive when we make that assumption.
Right, just like if you said somebody from... upper state New York. Oh, you're from New York, and you automatically expect them New York City, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Or you can go into Latin America, and you can draw your own application there.
I figured New York City's pretty neutral.
But,
there.
You know, we just make that assumption in the West that we don't see any distinction. What I say is we need to allow, I'm just going to say it boldly, we need to allow conversions. We need to allow ministries to step in to the void here. There might be lots and lots and lots and lots of people living under nominal Islam that don't, you know, they're just trying to be decent folks and do what they got to do, but that would embrace Christianity and would embrace these principles and use that as a platform to begin to challenge and stem off this radical surge of hatred that you can't deny comes from the very core of a radical version of Islam. A radical Christian doesn't do this.
No, and that's kind of what annoyed me yesterday. I heard one of the news reports, in their commentary, made the statement that President Obama was not willing to come out and specifically define, claim that this was ISIS or ISIL or anything because the evidence wasn't in at this point in time. And my immediate thought was, okay, let me think. Buddha, somebody with a religion of Buddhism, no, probably not them. Was it most likely maybe Christians doing this? Don't think so.
Could be a group of radical nuns?
Yeah, it could have been, whoever coming in there. But he was more than willing to come out in the instance with Ferguson and immediately condemn the police, white policemen, for shooting a black, unarmed black teenager. He was more than willing to do that before any of the evidence was in. And so it just comes to...
Yeah.
The reality is, we know who's doing this kind of stuff. It's just which specific group does it happen to be.
It's amazing how his gift of blink that Malcolm Gladwell described in his book, blink, are those people that can immediately detect something like out of expertise or intuition or whatever in seconds or minutes.
Right.
You know, President Obama has that. That gift works really good when it comes to, a cop and, urban confrontation. But it's funny. When it comes to stuff like this, he just doesn't see it at all. It just doesn't even appear on his screen. There's nothing there to even suggest that it could be an act of Islamic terror.
Right. It could have been just a...
He needs to read through, pages, stacked up like the tax code in order to just begin to get a grasp on what might have happened.
Yeah. And it just brings to light that here in the Middle East is the birthplace of Christianity. So why not make use of it? Because...
Well, I'll go further than that. Syria is the birthplace of Abraham.
Abraham, right. And and the Muslims claim Abraham as their descendant also. So why not make use of that as the ability, as the means of trying to change things
right.
in that environment?
Why don't these people of the Middle East have the right to consider another religion? Why do we have to reinforce the radical position that the leaders of Islam take? In America, you have the right to consider whatever religion you want. And why don't these people have the right? Why do we have to take that position where we reinforce that, Doug? I'm saying we're at a point now where I'm just, you know, quite bluntly, unless we there are mass conversions out of this radical force, that, you know, it's going to, you know, these are two immovable objects that are you know, they're on a crash course here.
Right.
You're talking about this war of, you know, of terrorism and little pockets here and there. It's going to go full blown at some point. It's someone after is saying this is going to be enough. We're not taking it anymore. Start making demands on, you know, the Islamic nations that are so deathly afraid of their own, you know, religious forces. And, you know, and say, you're going to deal with this. Oh, we're going to deal with this. And then, you know, it's going to careen out of control. I don't know how you cannot expect it to unless something radically changes in this environment.
Right. All right. We'll continue the discussion right after these commercial messages. We'll be back. More of Solomon on Blast.
It's another lonely evening.
Arizona News Radio. Senator John McCain criticizes the Obama administration following the attack in Paris that killed over 120 people. Obama said ISIS was contained mere hours before the attack.
The President of the United States going on just hours before the attack and saying ISIS is contained shows how completely out of touch he is with the realities on the ground and the realities concerning ISIS.
A top presidential candidate is in the Valley.
Republican presidential candidate Dr. Ben Carson is in Phoenix Saturday to file papers for his candidacy on the Arizona ballot. The GOP frontrunner will file in person at 2 p.m. on Saturday at the Arizona Secretary of State's office. Carson will then speak at the Outlook Leadership Conference in Scottsdale Saturday night. The retired neurosurgeon surpassed real estate tycoon Donald Trump in the polls this week after claiming he could secure the U.S.-Mexico border within a year of being elected president. Chris Dugan, Arizona News Radio, Phoenix.
Geico weather, sunny 79 in Phoenix, partly cloudy 53 in Flagstaff. For more news anytime, visit ArizonaNewsRadio.com. Mike Sauceda, Arizona News Radio.
Ready to get involved in the 2016 elections? Next year's outcome will impact issues that matter to you and Arizona. Registering to vote is quick, simple, and the only way to make sure your voice is heard. Register today at azcleanelections.gov.
Hi, I'm Bruce Fabrizio, inventor of Simple Green, the iconic cleaning formula known around the globe. Try a Simple Green product today, and if you're not 100% satisfied, I'll refund your money. Visit us at simplegreen.com. Simple Green!
Your home after a long day, preparing dinner, when...
Ew! What's that? It smells like rotten eggs.
That might be a natural gas leak.
It can't be. We don't have any natural gas appliances.
Even if you don't use natural gas, that rotten egg odor could be a sign of a leak in your neighborhood. Because gas lines can be buried anywhere.
Shut up.
No, speak up. If you ever suspect a leak, leave immediately and call 911 and Southwest Gas.
Thanks, Deep Voice Narrator.
You're...
Why not give us a call now and join in the discussion? 750-7456. We want to hear what you have to say.
Hello?
Power Talk 1210.
But I ain't too young to worry. I ain't too old to cry. When a woman gets me down. Got another empty bottle. And another empty bed. Ain't too young to admit it. No, I'm not too old to lie. I'm just another empty head. That's why I'm lonely.
All right, we're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. And that's all you can do. You got to keep riding on. I think Solomon says it pretty well. He says, I've seen something under the sun. Race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favor to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all. And things are going to continue on here in the United States, as they always do, especially with the holidays coming up. Everybody's going to be out there. But how does this really come into play and affect people's mindset with this kind of thing happening in France? What would the United States do in this particular situation? Obviously, we've got a lot larger border to have to deal with. You know, we wouldn't be able to just shut down the border. France has instituted basically a curfew, martial law for the most part. And they've shut down a lot of the tourist locations. Eiffel Tower shut down indefinitely. How do you really deal with that kind of thing in the United States? And is it likely to happen here?
I think one thing that works in the favor of most Americans, and that's the people that live within the coasts and that don't live in the major urban cities of the United States, that somewhere there seems to be a pattern with this, particularly the terrorists that are making the plans. Now, they've got the random guys that go off here and there.
Right.
But I'm talking about the actual ISIS leadership table and these kinds of people. They don't seem to see anything but the big cities. And like, you know, the iconic places within those cities, like the Eiffel Tower, thank God in America, they don't seem to see anything interesting besides those kinds of sites.
Right. New York City.
Yeah, yeah, New York.
Boston.
Los Angeles, Boston, San Francisco, Chicago. Those are the places with all these, you know, unique places like the Golden Gate Bridge. When I was living there, 9/11, I remember they dispatched the National Guard around the Golden Gate Bridge and around the Bay Bridge, and you saw them every single day for a period of time, you know, around those places. And those seem to be the magnets for these kinds of strategies for some reason.
Right. But if you believe the wisdom of Solomon and Proverbs, time and chance happen to all, there is that chance that this same kind of thing can occur here in the United States, and it could have a significant impact from an economic point of view. I'm sure this is really going to impact France, their economy, and with the fact that Europe isn't doing that well economically anyways, it's going to have an even larger impact, especially if other countries make the decision to shut down their borders and in order to protect themselves.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Solomon is trying to say there is that don't get too smug about any advantage or any personal strength, because if you pan back and look at the big picture, not everybody in an advantageous position wins all the time. And I think there's a particular word for our country, because, you know, Americans,
we have this viewpoint that,
we've been very fortunate, right?
Yes.
Where 9/11 is the worst thing that's ever happened on American soil. And, you know, that's it's happened in recent times. But by and large, we don't see this kind of stuff. And so we begin to think, well, yeah, that's Paris. Well, yeah, they have this policy. Well, you know, their military is not strong. And we start rationalizing what happens to other people and don't realize that, yeah, it can happen to anybody. And, you know, nobody has a complete handle on these things. And this has been one of the great theological debates forever, you know?
Is why does God allow evil to happen?
Yeah, exactly. Whence cometh evil, you know? Why? Why does it happen? Who does it come from? What mistakes did we make? Is it our fault? Is it someone else's fault? You know, people are always trying to ask these kinds of questions about these events. And I think Solomon's wisdom really does speak to the reality that man just is not privy to all that information. And you just have to be prepared. Basically, if you follow the thread of the whole book, it's better know who you are at the end of the day, right?
Right. And like I mentioned last week, it really boils down to the individual level. it isn't from a society point of view that Solomon is addressing people. He's addressing people face to face, that individual. In this case, he's speaking to his son, the young man that's trying to understand and learn the world. Here's the wisdom that Solomon has obtained. You've got to look at your own individual approach to life, who you want to run with, who you want to hang out with, the things that you allow yourself to do. And Solomon's pretty clear that when he says, you know, avoid those that pursue evil.
Yeah, just to bring context, you know, this is the kind of the way I like to put it when I'm teaching it, is that it would be like having somebody from your own little group, family, or your small town become a huge rock star, you know, and they just have everything. Uh-huh. And they're like wine, women, song, everything you can imagine they got to have and experience the very best of it. And then they come back after having an epiphany, a change of heart, and they want to teach people this side of wisdom. Like, listen, I've been there. I've done that. Let me tell you how it really goes. You think because you have all this going for you that that's a guarantee of a good, fulfilled, happy life. Solomon is saying, not so. Not so at all. The real happiness, and you read the whole book of Ecclesiastes. I love this book because, you know, chapter 9, he talks about learning just to embrace your life. What you got going, your family, you know, he talks about your wife, and basically he's saying you better learn how to embrace what you have, because that's really, if you're going to get anything out of life, that's where it is, your life, what you really have. And that's the whole context of that statement in chapter 9 that you quoted. He said, the race is not to the swift, the battle to the strong, food for the wise. You know, we think, unless I'm in that group, you know, we have nothing. But this does feed, it does turn the corner here back to what we've been talking about, mm-hmm. and that is the mentality of the grievance culture, right?
Right.
The mentality of the grievance culture is, unless I can have that, life's not really fair. Unless I'm amongst them, unless I am able to have a direct path into that group, you know, and it's been said before, but I believe it's true. I think self-loathing is a major factor when it comes to radical behavior. The radicals, I think, there's a lot of self-loathing that they cope with, thinking that they'll never be actualized as a person unless somehow they're able to break into that, what they call the 1%. And like, I always think, well, who wants to hang around with the 1%? So what? You know, if you've got, what makes America great is the middle class. Right. That you can have your freedom and your anonymity, and you can just do what you got to do.
What is that? That guy that is in the 1% really have that's different from what you have, right? Well, okay, maybe he has the $150,000 Bentley or $250,000 Bentley, but in today's technology, the, you know, $30,000 car's got all the same bells and whistles, rides just as nice. You know, there really isn't that much of a difference between what people perceive that they have. You have running water, you have heating and cooling. There isn't that much of a difference between what that wealthy person has and what you have yourself. So you can, you know, the internet has made things accessible. You know, you don't have to run to that big city and live the high life in the big city.
Well, I think that's what Solomon is kind of saying, right? Don't eat your heart out because you're not, in today's language, one of the 1%. In fact, he's saying, I've been there. It's not that vanity, all is vanity, you know? Right. He was like, he wasn't that impressed with what he experienced on that level. He said, I surveyed everything I put my hand to. And, you know, he's talking about some fantastic edifices that he built. I mean, he was, right. He reigned over Israel in the most, you know, ancient Israel in the most prosperous season ever. So I mean, he knows what he's talking about. He accomplished great things. The second temple is, you know, has his name,
right?
Solomon's temple. And he's talking from a vantage point of having really been there and done that. And he's just, that whole book is about, hey, don't eat your heart out and today's language, you don't have to embrace the grievance culture to say I'm not you, so I hate you, which I think Doug is really a way of saying I hate myself.
Right. It is. If you can't be satisfied with what you have and what you've been able to obtain in life on your own, then what are you really after? Some of the commentary that I was reading with regards to Booker T. Washington, he made it pretty clear. He says, among the most trying class of people with whom I came in contact with are the persons who have been educated in books to the extent they're able upon every occasion to quote a phrase or a sentiment from Shakespeare, Milton, Cicero, or some other great writer. Every time any problem arises, they're on the spot with a phrase or quotation. But he says no problem is so difficult that they're not able to come up with some kind of definition or abstraction to solve it. He says, even though he says, I like phrases and he finds them useful and convenient, but I have not found in them a solution for many of the actual problems in life. And I think that's what seems to be the viewpoint of people is, I can come up with all these definitions of problems and everything else, but they're not going to really actually solve the problems.
Well, people like Booker T. Washington, their example is so amazing in the sense of where he started and what he accomplished. I mean, that talking about 1%, you're talking about 0.00%, 1% right. of people even capable of doing what he did. Yep. And those kinds of stories are so over the top amazing that people don't even relate to them. Like, that's just like, you know what I mean?
Right, but
that's like a freak of nature kind of thing.
But the fact that the president of Harvard made the comment, and he was referring to Tuskegee University when he made that comment that I mentioned at the beginning, that more self-made millionaires came out of Tuskegee University than all of Yale, Harvard, and Princeton had produced.
Right. So, self-made is the word to underscore there,
right.
because a lot of those people had
privilege to achieve
what they had. Self-made millionaire parents.
And I think the approach that Booker T. Washington was taking in training these people coming into the university, it's really the obvious solution that there's really no secret to it. It's been there for thousands of years, and Solomon said it. You know, you train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it.
Now, here's what really scares me about what's going on in Paris, and then, you know, the massive immigration shift from Syria around the world, and now they're, you know, debating in America. It's taking... One hand, you have, you know, radical Islam, which is anything radical sounds interesting to a young man anyway, off the bat. And then you add to that the American grievance culture, and you marry those two ideas. They're already both are very, can be extremely dangerous. The American grievance culture has mostly been, you know, protest marches and right. stuff like that. But man, you marry those two together, and you're asking for
a lot of trouble.
That's a serious cocktail.
All right, we'll be back after these quick commercial breaks with more of Solomon on Blast to continue this discussion.
Broke another promise. Now broke another heart.
Tell all your friends you found the only station around that respects you enough not to try to tell you how to think. We figure you are already smart enough to choose this station to listen to, so you're certainly able to form your own opinions about everything else in life. We're Power Talk 1210, the power to think for yourself.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
Do you struggle to take control of your cholesterol levels? If so, you have a higher cardiovascular risk of heart attack or stroke. Take control of your risk with the help of Tucson's trusted certified lipid specialist, Nicole Safone, and her team at Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology. Through a basic heart-healthy lifestyle and advanced therapies, you can start taking back control of your cardiovascular risk of heart attack or stroke. To schedule your advanced cholesterol screening and personal cardiovascular risk reduction plan, call Tucson's trusted certified lipid specialist, Nicole Safone, at Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology at 520-323-7277. Or ask your doctor for a referral to Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology, 520-323-7277. To learn more about cardiovascular risk reduction, be sure and visit us online at azlipidcenter.com. Arizona Center for Advanced Lipidology, serving Tucson, Nogales, and Yuma. Call us today at 520-323-7277.
Why not give us a call now and join in the discussion? 750-7456. We want to hear what you have to say.
Hello?
Power Talk 1210.
Sure am hard to beat, but I'm lonely. Lord, I'm lonely. What am I gonna do?
All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast. In Proverbs 28:7. Solomon says, whoever keeps the law is a discerning son, but a companion of gluttons shames his father. And in talking about this whole thing of the disadvantage in the United States and the approach that a lot of these people have, especially coming out of the colleges with what's going on the last week or so with these hunger strikes and everything, I think Solomon says a companion of gluttons shames his father. Well, I think these people are a little gluttonous when it comes to trying to obtain the rights that they believe they have within these universities to just destroy somebody else. Booker T. Washington made the comment. He says, when I meet cases, as I frequently do, of such unfortunate and misguided young men as I've described, I cannot but feel the profound sympathy for them because I know they're not wholly to blame for their condition. I know that in 9 out of 10 cases, they have gained the idea at some point in their career that because they're black, they're entitled to the special sympathy of the world and that they have thus gotten into the habit of relying on this sympathy rather than on their own efforts to make their way. And that seems to kind of be the case of what, especially what with what was going on there in the University of Missouri, to destroy somebody's career like they did over what were supposed to be perceived attacks on them is just, as I think you made the comment, we're living in Alice in Wonderland world, not reality here.
Yeah, we were talking previously about the shooting at Virginia Tech, what, 9-10 years ago? I don't know how long ago it's been. So one of the things that came out of that is a lot of people were asking the president to resign, you know, because I guess he made a security decision somewhere in the middle of that event. And so many people came to his defense, spoke up for him and said, no, you know, he's not responsible. We know he's not responsible. But there is something to say, honestly, to say about somebody shouldering some kind of responsibility, the guy in charge, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he ends up getting the support where he keeps his job. And that was over a massacre.
Right. People murdered.
Students
on
under
campus.
His care were massacred on the campus. So this guy ends up getting the understanding to keep his job. And the president in Missouri, who actually wasn't even part of the whole You know, he didn't say anything too crazy, just hemmed and hawed like a lot of people in those positions do now because they don't want to get in trouble.
Right.
You know, this guy's got to step down, you know, because it's just too much to bear. And then when the facts of this story start emerging and this the guy that led the hunger strike comes from a prosperous family.
Yeah, I don't think he... I don't understand the whole concept of a hunger
strike.
You know,
and they're talking about white privilege, and here's a guy, he's, you know, virtually one of the Cosby kids that's going into this hunger strike. You know, it's pretty hard to, you know, even wrap your mind around how this was even able to get wings, Doug. I don't even know how the story even got further than, okay, kid, either you start eating something or we're gonna give you an IV.
Or
I don't know how it got past that.
I don't know why it isn't just, okay, if you don't want to eat, don't eat. Because isn't that the culture today, that you can do what you want to do and nobody should be able to say yay or nay about it? So my approach is, hey, you don't want to eat, don't eat. But basically pretty much ignore them. We have our
folks. This is
caller
Jake.
Again.
This is Jake
in
Feinberg.
Studio caller.
No, but okay, but I don't want you to I agree with you that you know, he's wealthy, but that you're missing the point. The football team is millions of dollars.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so absolutely. so the point is that they were not going to play. A large chunk of the team was not going to show up and play.
And
the
cost, the
game.
It was going to cost the university $1 million.
So I could care less that this guy came from an affluent family. You know, the point is that he went to the team and said, you know, as student athletes, the inspiring thing for me, whether you agree with what happened or not, is that sports, even in my, I'm 37. I was a fanatical sports fan. I should be doing a sports show here, but everybody does sports.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay? So, the point is that he went to these guys and said, listen, do you know the kind of power that you have? Not on the field, but the idea of saying, you know, he motivated them to basically strike. And as we know, sports drives many academic institutions, which claim that they're left-wing think tanks, but actually athletics generates most a lot of the money.
Okay, no.
So what I'm saying is don't miss the
let
point.
Let me underscore something you just said. They have power not on the field. So let's isolate that statement. You know that out of the SEC, they're like 13th out of 14th, 1-5 in the league, 4-5 overall. I will tell you something,
but
Jake.
It's the midway. It's fanatical sports.
If
the University of Missouri was in a place to contend on any level for anything, a major bowl, do you think those players would have bought into that and distracted? They're having a horrible year, and so a distraction like this seems to probably is the most exciting thing to happen all season for the Missouri Tigers.
A win.
So
a
I
win
don't believe this.
But it was not in contention, I don't believe this would have had any impact on them at all. I will just say this, and then I'll let you guys finish up.
No, go ahead.
Missouri, not too long ago, was playing in bowl games. They're having a bad year, but this is not
absolutely.
This is not like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Okay, this is not like a historically bad team. So the point is that there's a couple of things that you guys should. I would like to get your thoughts on, and that is the idea that they're having a bad year. Okay,
I'm saying that weighed into their response.
But what about the idea of the amount of attention drawn to the fact that they would not play if they did go down and not play, the ripple effect it would have across other colleges in the country? Do you think that there was a fear there to say, get this president out of here, because if this is going to become a scene, and it's going to become, as we see with these mass murder attacks with social media, it's going to become what do they call it?
It's a copycat.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the
and
point.
That's already
now,
happening.
Now here's another thing that bothers me about this. For one thing, coming from this kid and then all these rumors of insensitive and racial epithets and whatnot, you and I know the real world, right? A football player who works out all the time, who's basically,
350-pound lineman.
he's basically everything Arnold Schwarzenegger wished he was in The Terminator. And so you got this little little skinhead Nazi fool saying something so ridiculous. In the real world, these guys would regulate that situation without any violence, just by looking at that guy with cross eyes. He'd probably change his opinion after wetting himself, right? In real life.
In real life,
so
yeah.
So when does this whole thing turn into where we need safe space? This little Nazi guy is intimidating us, and we need... I mean, but, it doesn't make sense.
Listen, but
it doesn't make sense to me at all.
I heard Rush Limbaugh the next day. I've never heard him more angry about shouting down the youth. And all I would say is that real change, stuff that I necessarily may agree with or not, comes from the youth. The youth is not awakened right now. They have been digitized, okay? So the idea here is that, yeah, you may disagree with the tactics. Maybe it's wimpy.
I don't even understand why in real life it wouldn't happen. And I'm saying in real life, you put those two people in the same place, and the little skidhead Nazi fool is going to shrink pretty fast. That's what I'm saying, right? In the real world.
I think we're talking about, listen, we're talking about a, I hate to say
the
it.
College
I
mean, campuses.
And it's also a different generation than me. I mean, listen, you used to, your people in your generation would handle fights a certain way. People in my generation would handle it. And you, what you're talking about, I'm not going to say it's outdated. It's just a different model. And we live listen, Mark Kelly told me a couple weeks ago, it's a much less violent time than 100 years ago in the world.
But it's much more pacifist, too.
Well, and also, the mass violence, these mass killings are spiking because of new media. We're seeing, listen, I'm with you, okay? I'm just saying there's different
I got to cut you off. Unfortunately, we're done for this week already, Jake. We could always
talk
back.
To you, Jake.
All right.
Yeah, appreciate it. So, as usual, until next week, we'll keep thinking wisely. And hopefully things will get better. Thanks for listening.
Broadcasting live from the Tucson Original Studios. This is KEVT Sawita Tucson. The Tucson Originals. Local dining at its best.
CBS News, I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Cal State says one of its design students, 20-year-old Noemi Gonzalez of El Monte, California, is among the 129 people killed in the terror attacks in Paris last night. Through an interpreter, Paris prosecutor says the terrorists operated in three teams, and one of the seven dead attackers was known to French police.
He was sentenced eight times between 2008 and 2010 for common law violations. And he was considered a radicalized person.
CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer in Paris.
The French authorities are working very hard to establish a picture of who carried out this attack. We've been told just a couple of things, that one of the attackers was a French national and an extremist who was already on the radar of the French security services for extremist views. And another body was found, one of the bombers near the football stadium was found to have two passports on it, an Egyptian and a Syrian one.
CBS's Elaine Cobb says one attacker's passport had been stamped in Lyros, Greece in October.
This, of course, is going to once again raise the question of just how important it might be to reinstate border controls on people coming in, on all the waves of migrants.
On a mission given to me by Woody Shaw, Sunship, Dizzy, and John Kahn, dedicated to pursuing a piece of our cultural heritage through interviews with my music heroes. This is the Jake Feinberg Show.
folks. Welcome inside the Parisi Palace, high above 2919 East Broadway. This is the Jake Feinberg Show on Power Talk 1210. Sourita Tucson, thank you so much for making us part of your day today. And it is one heavy show today. And our first guest, straight out of the box, we just heard him.